Thursday, June 2nd. I spent the morning in a big push on Operation Trousseau. Molly Parnes came with some fall things, which I tried on and found one quite lovely ensemble, which might be turned into a dress for August the 6th if we could find just the right fabric. Lucy flew up in the morning in a great flutter of excitement, bringing with her Charlotte, Helene, and Sharon. She set up shop in the other apartment at the Carlisle, but came in like a delightful little whirlwind and was enthralled with two of Marley's dresses, a pink print chiffon and a white lace that would be elegant for the Clark party. And then I went over and watched Charlotte and Helene and Sharon try on bridesmaids' dresses. We settled on the rose moray. It will be so colorful and beautiful, and we'll pray for a cool day. Robin came about 12. How great to see her. Thinner than ever, fresh, energetic, sparkling. I look forward to every hour I spend with her. We had lunch at the picture window, looking down into Central Park, and quietly discussed Lindbergh's possible trip to Spain. While Lucy and bridesmaids and Bess had hamburgers in a state of pandemonium in the other suite. Robin thinks Linda can actually have a good time, a free time, in Spain without being devoured by the press. Though she's quite firm that Linda must meet them once, she, Robin, is returning around the 15th. I shall yearn and hope that Linda gets to go then or shortly afterward, and I'll believe it when her plane is airborne. I got from Robin some inkling of how we were up there in the Tower of the Carlisle, a sort of embattled fortress, with the press station downstairs at every entrance in force, with plenty of cameras, and recording such world-shaking news as that the well-known gown firm of Priscilla of Boston slipped some entries into the suite on two hangers covered with muslin, and Molly Parnes and her rival, Adele Simpson, local talent vying for the White House trade, spirited their wares in through the service entrance. Also joining the fashion parade was Mrs. C. Trez, representative of Dallas Neiman Marcus Department Store, who carried in a yellow silk dress concealed in a white garment bag. One story began with, "If official comment offers any key, the president's daughter will wear ankle-length secrecy and a short veil of no comment." After lunch, Robin left and Adele Simpson came. I tried on things and found that I was suddenly desperately tired and nothing would do. It was a great good sport. I felt terribly sorry. The yellow dresses she had made up, especially for August 6th, weren't really right. When she left, I lay down for about an hour's rest. And then a very important break in the day. Mrs. Díaz Ordaz, wife of the President of Mexico, came to have tea with me, bringing her secretary and her son. We'd begun trying to find her early that morning. Yes, she was registered at the Waldorf. No, she'd gone out to shop. No one knew where nor when she would return. Amazingly enough, it was her son who, after giving us this information, set out to try to find her. And in the third district, recognized her car, went in, gathered up his mother, phoned us, and brought her to tea. We had a delightful time, reminiscing about my wonderful days in Mexico. I told her that Lyndon had shown the movie to every guest we had had since then, telling them about the wonderful people of Mexico. She said they too had taken a movie and intended to send us a print of it. They had received a print of ours just before she left. I chattered away in Spanish, probably making gruesome mistakes, but we enjoyed each other tremendously. I thanked her for the offer of the government house, of the Alemán house, for my possible vacation, but that I couldn't be using it this time, and she said it would be ready for us any time. Then, after several cups of tea and affectionate greetings to El Presidente and their married daughter, Licaria Flores, and all the wonderful people I'd met, we said goodbye. Now it was time to get ready for Mary's party, the big event, one of the two reasons for my trip. A hairdresser from Elizabeth Arden's came. I had an elaborate up hairdo and wore my new print chiffon in all the shades of red and pink and maroon and black. It sounds wild, but it looks lovely. And feeling very elegant, I set out past the cordon of the press to Mary's a little before 8. Lindbergh was going on to dinner at Mrs. Ann MacDonald Ford's and joining us for the dance. Les and Tyler had come up for the evening to escort Liz and Bess to this party that we'd looked forward to so much. Mary had thoughtfully sent me a guest list. Under the dryer, I'd spent time looking at it. There would be several that I'd now come to think of as old friends who'd be there. Lawrence Rockefeller, without Mary, she's somewhere for the YW, and Brooke Astor, and Angie and Robin, and Anna and Paul Hoffman, and Mrs. Andre Meyer, Dick Adler would be Mary's host, and her good friends, Mr. John Gunther, whom I'd met at our house last summer, and Dr. Michael DeBakey would make interesting company. It was a private party, not reported, but the press was there in full measure as guests. The Gardner Coles, Mrs. Dorothy Schiff, the Tony Catledges later for the dancing, as well as the Arthur Ox Sulzbergers and the Leonard Goldensons from the other media. Mary met me at the door. At Liz's suggestion, I paused long enough for the press to get several pictures of the two of us. Then we went in, closing the door, we hoped, on the outside world. And the inside world was very enchanting indeed. Mary's house glowing with its beautiful portraits and exquisite flower arrangements against the background of white walls and white furniture. What a perfect fall. It's a dramatic house. The dinner was delightful. I was between Dick Adler and Paul Huffman. And Dick Adler and I soon discovered that we had a bit of a common background and a love of Chapel Hill. He'd known Paul Green well, and I only from having enjoyed his dramas. And Sam Seldon had been his teacher. I always find Paul Huffman intensely interesting. He talked about the developing nations of Africa. He used a phrase that I found comfort in, the rising tide of common sense in the world today. Actually, he credited Walt Rostow with it. He thinks that even in the decade or two they've been coming into existence, African nations have made sizable strides away from chaos and toward, as he puts it, common sense. For several of the beautiful and brittle ladies that I had met since coming into this job, Jane Reitzman, Mrs. Beverly Wacker, who had helped put on the benefit in Rebecca Harkness's house for beautification, and Mrs. Bill Blair, who'd been the hostess, the wife of our ambassador, when we visited Denmark the month before President Kennedy died. I had an interesting little bit of conversation with Philip Johnson, who graciously assured me that I'd put the library in good hands with SOM, and I thanked him for coming to Austin for the environmental conference. After dinner, the guests for the dance began to arrive, and I felt like practically falling into the arms of sweet Arthur Krim. He'd come without Matilda, because she's getting some work out of the way so that they can go to Texas with us tomorrow for the weekend. And how good to see Ed and Alice Weisel. The theater, too, was very well represented a little later on by Barbara Harris, who'd played in 1,000 Clowns, and I believe in A Clear Day, and Kitty Carlisle, Moss Hart's wife. Angela Lansbury, very sweet, whom I had seen in Auntie Mame just the night before. And Dina Merrill, the beautiful daughter of Mrs. Meriwether Post. I told her I had just seen a lovely portrait of her as a girl in Mrs. Post's dining room. The world of clothes is quite an important one, I'm finding out. Molly Parnish was there with her husband, Robert Livingston, and also Eleanor Lambert and Diana Reed Vreeland. And also, from the theater, the Rip Torns, she's Geraldine Page. I had seen her in Sweet Bird of Youth. Linda Bird came in with Mrs. Ford. She'd had a fascinating time at the dinner, Linda said, and of course I purred when about 3 or 4 of Mrs. Ford's dinner guests came up and told me, with a sort of an air of discovery, that Linda Bird was beautiful, or so intelligent, or sparkling. This may have been spurious coin, but I took it for gold. Jim Fosberg and I had a few quiet minutes to talk about the Aikens. He has definite reservations about it. And I saw the Grant Fordyces. We'd had such a wonderful time in Mary's Rose Garden with them last June. I was so glad that Mary had invited the Bob Kentners. I have a little understanding of the sort of blow he's had, and I salute those friends who stand by. But almost the most fun of the evening for me was to sit on a sofa with John Loeb, whose rather saturnine good looks fascinate me, and talk quietly. I keep on forgetting he's a Republican. Dorothy Goldberg was there without Arthur. She said Lyndon had called him off on a mission. Actually, there wasn't a great deal of dancing for me. Much more drifting through the lovely rooms, having a moment of talk with a series of quite delightful guests. But then, almost over my shoulder, I saw Mary, with a very harassed look, gathering up Dr. DeBakey and heading for the telephone. They were in a relatively quiet corner, using the phone for some time. I tried not to notice because I felt I knew what it was. Nancy must have taken a turn for the worse. And Mary had to put on a smile over her concern and fear and play the hostess to about 100 people. So after just a few dances, a little before 1 o'clock, I told Mary I thought I'd better go home. She escorted me to the door, and I hugged and thanked her without even mentioning what I thought I knew, leaving Linda at the party.